Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's chant 58 through 60.
Yathādi ponivātastha.
Yathādi ponivātastha.
Ityādi virane kadha.
Ityādi virane kadha.
Bhagavādi mam te vartam.
Bhagavādi mam te vartam.
Arjunayanyarupayat.
Anada
viha samsare.
Anada viha samsare.
Sanchitta karma kotayah.
Sanchitta karma kotayah.
Anena vilayam yanti.
Anena vilayam yanti.
Shuddho dharmo vivardhate.
Shuddho dharmo vivardhate.
Dharma meghamimam prahuhu.
Dharma meghamimam prahuhu.
Samadhin yoga vittamaha.
Samadhin yoga vittamaha.
Varshatyesha yato dharma.
Varshate shayato dharma.
Amrta dhara sahasrashah.
Amrta dhara sahasrashah.
Kata. Deepaha. Nivatasyatsa. Nivatasta.
Nivatastha.
Ityadibhi.
Ityadibhi.
Iti adibhi.
Iti adibhi.
Anekadha.
Anekadha.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
Imam.
Imam.
Eva artham.
Eva artham.
Arjunaya.
Arjunaya.
Nyarupayat.
Nyarupayat.
A lot of the verses here, especially in the Nididhyasana, Samadhi, and Nirvikalpa Samadhi, are taken right from the Yoga Shastra and the Patanjali Yoga Shastra. The sutras actually are very close to the, very close in the wording to the actual Patanjali Yoga Sutras. And so here Vidyaranya wants to make it clear that actually Patanjali is considered as a rishi. And what he was able to put together in terms of the Yoga Sutras are there throughout the Vedas. And so the Vedas, the first part of the Vedas and the Vedanta. And so it's really, that's it, it's really when you do read through the Ashtanga Yoga, the Yamaniyam, and all of these things, all of the values and everything that is taught there are taught throughout the Vedas. So it's Vedic. And so he was able to potentially was able to put these in the Ashtanga Yoga in a very meaningful sequence. And so that's why also even though the Yoga Sutras are very tied with the Sankhya, and Sankhya with, especially Sankhya with the Yoga Sutras, because they believe that the Ashtanga Yoga is very appropriate means for really realizing the nature of the Purusha as this pure conscious being in the Nirvikalpa Samadhi. So they totally take on the Ashtanga Yoga potentially. But so do all of the other darshanas, and even the Bauddha, because the Bauddha is not Vedic, but all of these other darshanas are Vedic. And everything that, many of what, even the examples that potentially uses are there to be found in the Shruti, but also in the Smriti. And so here he's giving an example of one of these drishtantas that is used in the Yoga Sutras, that is used by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And he also mentions here in the commentary that chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, except for the very end of it, when they're talking about this Ubhayabhrashta, like what happens to me when I die, and I'm going to be left in limbo somehow because I don't belong either here or there. I'm not a samsara anymore, but I'm just a mumuksha. I'm right in the middle. So what's going to happen? So he spends 2 or 3 verses dealing with that at the end of chapter 6. But most of chapter 6 is devoted to nididhyasana, to meditation. And so a lot of the things that we find in one form in the Yoga Sutras are found in chapter 6 of the Gita, and then there are other quotes and whatnot where these things are found in the Vedas. So just so that you know that what is being taught here is Vedic, and also what potentially is teaching in terms of the value systems and body of life, they're also Vedic. It doesn't really belong to a darshan. It has its roots in the Vedas. So, not that it does belong to a darshana, but being an astika, their astika means they accept the Vedas as a pramana. Much of what potentially has to say in the Yoga Sutras is there in the Vedas themselves. That's why Swamiji also teaches the Yoga Sutras when Ramana and Patel comes to town on the East Coast. They'll do a course together where Swamiji will take some of the major Yoga Sutras and Ramana and Patel and explain them, and from the Vedantic standpoint, and Ramana and Patel teach the yoga asanas and pranayama. Okay, so that's kind of the intro in the commentary, very short commentary on this verse. So what it says is, yatha, just as, deepaha nivatasta iti. So it just takes a little portion of this that was also quoted earlier. Just as a lamp which is in a windless place, a lamp or a flame, you know, deepa, a flame situated in a place where there's no wind, nivata. So deepaha yatha, just as deepaha nivataha ityadi, etc. He says, beginning with this, he says ityadi bihi, by statements such as this, anekada, there are many such statements. Anekada, there are countless statements like this, and rishtantas, illustrations like this in both the Shruti and the Smriti. And then many of them are, in terms of the Bhagavad Gita, many, many found in the chapter 6, which is really kind of a yoga, you know, yoga shastra. So, not Karma Yoga, and it's much more to do with the Ashtanga Yoga. So then it says, so taking this yata deepaha nivatastaha, is Bhagavan imam eva artam. The meaning of this, Bhagavan teaches the nirupaya. Bhagavan teaches the meaning of this. He unfolds this to Arjuna. And so why this is said, it's not something exactly to be unfolded, but the reason that he's bringing this in is because he wants to root this in the Upanishads and in the Vedas, and not just rooted in the potential Yoga Sutras. And to look at potentially as a rishi who's also given something very valuable to the tradition. The Yoga Sutras actually, for all of you at some point, you may want to study the Yoga Sutras. You know, just so that you have that available to you. Not that you would teach it or use it in a way that's not necessary, but it would be nice if you, it would be nice to be familiar with it. Or maybe you all are, I don't know. So anyway. So all of this in the commentaries, he says that Bhagavan is teaching Arjuna his sisha, all of this that has to do with nirvikalpa samadhi, everything that has to do with nirvikalpa samadhi and recognizing that the no, there's not everything that has to do with nirvikalpa samadhi he teaches and teaches. Let's do the next verse. Repeat after me. Anadau
Anadau
Iha Samsare
Samsare
Samchitaha
Samchitaha
Karmakoteha
Karmakoteha
Anena
Anena
Vilayam
Vilayam
Yanti
Yanti
Shuddha
Shuddha
Dharmaha
Dharmaha
Vivardhate
Vivardhate.
Now this is in the introduction to this, the little short little introduction to this verse, because now he gives what's called an avantara pala. Avantara pala is like a secondary gain, right? So in learning, in the practice of samadhi, learning how to practice that, the dharana and jnana, the sadhikalpa samadhi and then the nirvikalpa samadhi, how all of that works, the primary gain is nirvikalpa samadhi. Recognizing that viveka. That's the primary gain. But there's another gain also. It's called an avantara pala. The secondary gain that comes off of this primary gain. And so what he says here is anadau means beginningless. So anadau here, samsare. Here in this beginningless, samsara. Anadau, samsare. Right? 7-1. Here, iha. So in this beginningless samsara, sanchitaha karmakotayaha. There are crores, countless, there are countless karmas, karmakotayaha, or countless karmas, which are the, in the sanchitta. Sanchitaha karmakotayaha. So remember the three types of karma? There's the sanchitta karma, the prarabdha karma, the agami karma. The sanchitta karmas are all of the karmas, the punya, the adrishta polas. The adrishta polas are the punya and papa that have not yet fructified. But you've performed those karmas and you've reaped the punya and papa of those karmas. But since they haven't really fructified in terms of the prarabdha karma, they are stored in the sanchitta. And so there's like an infinite number, countless number of karmas because beginningless lives. You know, how many are there? If you have like beginningless lives, there can be like beginningless karmas. There's an infinite number of karmas stored there in the sanchitta. So here it says just countless karma kotiya. Kotiya is a krora, which is a huge amount. So there's in this beginningless samsara, this creation that is manifesting and being sustained and going into unmanifest condition from beginningless time. Each manifestation is, you know, millions of years, millions and millions of years, and there are beginningless ones of those. So in this beginningless creation, all of the sanchitta karmas, anena, by this nirvikalpa samadhi, anena, so by this, by what? By this nirvikalpa samadhi, vilayam yante, they dissolve. They go to a state of vilayam, a state of dissolution. It's as though the nirvikalpa samadhi burns them alive. That's the other. And not only that, not only does it burn out all of this, I'll talk about this in another way in a little bit. It gets rid of all of the sanchitta karma. And another thing it does is shuddha dharmaha vivardhate. The shuddha dharma, what they mean here by shuddha, shuddha is pure, dharma is dharma. But dharma is also now used in this sense, punya, pure punya. Because normally, when you're doing a karma, there's a little papa involved. Even if you're doing a good deed, it can have traces of papa in it, because as you are doing a good deed, you killed an ant. You did something happened. And so it will have all your deeds, even the punya that you accrue, will have little traces of papa. But in nirvikalpa samadhi, there is no duality whatsoever. There is just the satchitatma, satchitananda. And so from the standpoint of the nirvikalpa, there's no lesha. Lesha means just a little trace. There's no trace of papa. So he says that dharma, that punya, which is shuddha, pure punya, no trace of papa, is something that continues to grow. And if you remember, vivardha means to increase, to grow. And in the verse number 57, it said, you know, the anuvrittis, anuvritti is that repeating, that flow of vrittis, which has for their content the self. So that flow of vrittis initially takes some effort. The effort which comes before that flow happens, and you go into nirvikalpa samadhi, which you don't have any will over. So we looked at that last class. So it says, what are the things that have gone before? Well, there's the immediate effort of doing the dhanana, becoming single-pointed on your own being, and then holding that, and then having a savikalpa samadhi, which then naturally changes into this nirvikalpa samadhi without any effort on your part. But first there is that effort. But there is also punya. That's the adrishta. There's also punya to even give you the samskaras to be able to even do this. You know, so there's that punya, as well as from the practice of it, the samskaras is from the punya, and from the asakrit abhyasa, from the repeated practice of contemplation. And the first thing you can imagine when you first come to this knowledge, or even as you mature in it, when you first start contemplating, the thought that your mind is just going to resolve into the self and you have nirvikalpa samadhi, it takes a while for that type of, you know, anuvritti to naturally take place. You know? And so, first of all, what gives you the samskara in the first place to even do that? Previous punya. You know? And then having that previous punya, what allows that to happen is repeated abhyasa. Abhyasa means repetition, repeatedly, not just once, you repeat, well, not once, asakrit many, many times. And that trains the mind to be able to, in terms of the potentially yoga sutras, that you're training the mind and able in allowing it to get that type of absorption. So that's what aids that acts as an aid, like a friend, to the effort that you make right now through the dhanana, and then the jhana, and the savikalpa samadhi. It's an effort that you're making that then will fructify in nirvikalpa on its own, without any effort on your part. But what else aids that process is this adrishta punya, the punya that you've collected, and then also the repeated practice. So now, after having told about that, this is all there to be found in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Shruti, in the Smriti, he now tells some of the another two palas here in this verse. There's two palas that are called avantra palas. The nirvikalpa samadhi is the primary pala, and the avantra palas are. All of a sudden, crores and crores of the sanchitta karmas are destroyed, are resolved. In this beginningless samsara, crores of sanchitta karma, they are resolved. And number two, that's number one. Number two, the shuddha dharma, the punya increases. And that punya, in the form of dharma, shines in the mind. There's a brilliance in the mind. There's a shuddhi in the mind. And so that's the second avantara pala, is the increase in the punya, which then facilitates your antakarma shuddhi. That's the idea. There's just for a second. There's another way we talk about this also that's important. Just to understand the same, a little bit the same in a different context. We say that the jiva has three types of karma: the sanchitta karma, the prarabdha karma, the agami karma. The sanchitta karmas are all of those countless karmas that have yet to fructify, and they'll fructify in the prarabdha karma, at some point in one of the births you take. They're limitless, so when they would fructify kind of depends on who you are at that time of the death of your last birth. Who you are will depend at that time, that moment of death, will attract the sanchitta karmas, which will then be exhausted through living them out. For somebody who has jnanam, atma jnanam, has that nishta, that clarity, then for them, at that time of having that clarity, not that nirvicikitsa, vichikitsa, if you remember that word, you're free, a knowledge free from doubt. So that means you know yourself, okay? When that's so, the sanchitta karmas no longer belong to you. They've never belonged to the Atma at any time. Because the Atma is non-dual, it's changeless, it doesn't have attributes, it doesn't have any appendages of any kind, so there's not some sanchitta karma hanging off of the self. Because the self is absolutely one without a second, non-dual. So there is never has been any sanchitta karma for you. And so when the ahankara for you, the I notion for you, becomes mithya, and it only becomes mithya because you know yourself. The ahankara then, the one that says, I am this, or doesn't even have to use the words, it just takes it for granted, I am this physical body, I am this body-mind sense organs complex, I am really the subtle body that transmigrates, you know, and then all these points of identification in reference to your mind and your thoughts and all these kinds of things, those are all real for me. It's not that I even have a second thought about it. That's what we mean by ahankara. I actually do take myself for granted as this body, mind, sense organs. But when one gains knowledge that ahankara still is operational only as mithya, only in terms of the language, because this body, mind, sense organs is, you know, in Ishwar Srishti. It's Ishwar's creation. It's not your imagination. It's not a product of your mind. So when one gets knowledge, of course, the way that you think, the way that you feel, these things all change quite a bit because a huge burden has been lifted. A lot of problems go when that ajnanam is removed because you no longer need to depend upon the world for the wholeness that you are. You no longer have to worry about what happens to me when I die. And all of these kind of things are resolved in your knowledge, really. Your idea of death becomes very similar to the dream, what happens in the dream. So there is no death, actually. It doesn't even exist. And so you recognize that in many, many different ways. And so because now, because the ahankara has moved to the aham, it's no longer ahankara. It's no longer a made-up I that's brought about by ignorance. It's now, when you say I, it lands on the Atma. It lands on who you actually are. And who you actually are has no sanchitta karma because you have no karma at all. Yeah. It's simply not there. The agami karma, the karmas that you perform in this life, also you have no identification with them. The only thing that hangs on, and not from your standpoint, but from the fact of it, is the prarabdha karma. Because the sanchitta is gone. The agami is gone. But the prarabdha karma is now Ishwar Srishti. And so that prarabdha karma has to live out. The prarabdha has to live itself out. And it exhausts itself with your death. That means that prarabdha karma is over. Because you're in, it's Ishwara now. And here you are, the subtle body is you know, connected with this physical body, and it will play itself out. And at the end of this prarabdha karma, then that is also gone. Even though for a jnani, you're always free from all three, but the prarabdha karma doesn't disappear. Yeah. Still, you're free from it. it's here, you know, and the body has the experience of it, but from your own standpoint, you're completely free from it, and you've always been free from it. There's no question of that. And so now when we're talking here about nirvikalpa samadhi, having this avantara pala, the secondary thing, we should be talking about nirvikalpa samadhi in terms of, we can call the akanda akara vritti, means that akanda akara vritti that has no subject object, it's just my own being. There is a sukshma vritti, a subtle vritti there, it's called an ati sukshma vritti, which allows you to have a memory when you come out of that. But that's nirvikalpa samadhi. But that nirvikalpa samadhi represents, not that you have to have a big nirvikalpa samadhi, it represents your knowledge. So if now we're using nirvikalpa samadhi as being that which is responsible for removing the sanchitta karmas and the agami and all of these karmas, if we're saying that, then you have to realize that what they mean by the sanchitta karma is the akanda akara vritti that takes place at the time of teaching, where there is a recognition of yourself through viveka. It means you recognize the purity or the non-dual nature of your being that is here with or without this creation. So nirvikalpa samadhi, that's why at the end of aparokshanubhuti, which is a beautiful text actually by Shankara, he has 10 verses or so on samadhi, on nirvikalpa samadhi. And he goes, do you really need to sit in meditation for nirvikalpa samadhi? Is that true? When are you not in nirvikalpa samadhi? When are you not in nirvikalpa samadhi? As long as this world is mithya, and it's not just a word, if you recognize it, to recognize the mithya, you have to recognize yourself. When are you not in nirvikalpa samadhi? So that's something important to understand. That's like when Ramana finally, when he was taught by a few pundits, when he understood, and you know, I mean, as the story goes, he understood everything those pundits were saying as they said it, because he's already had that antikarana shuddhi, and he had nirvikalpa samadhi, he had all of these things. But he used to think he needed to close his eyes. And then he realized, I don't have to close my eyes at all. My eyes are open or closed. What difference does it make? Does my open eyes cover me? Do the vrittis I have cover me? You know? It's kind of like asking the sun, you know, oh sun, in S-U-N, oh sun, in order to experience yourself, must we get rid of the clouds? Do I have to get rid of the clouds for me to be myself? I would say, not at all. Not at all. I'm the luminary of the clouds. Yeah? I'm not on the other side of the clouds. I'm the luminary of the clouds. So how can the clouds or anything cover me? And so it's really like that. How can any, if I have knowledge, you know, how can anything cover me? Because I'm the luminary. I'm my own self-evident being, I'm conscious being, you know, because of which everything else is illumined. That's that anubhati. You know? Everything is illumined after me. And so where is there any covering for me? When am I not in nirvikalpa samadhi? Another way to look at it, say you take any vritti that you have, sukha, dukkha, any vritti. That vritti is sattva, the vritti itself, because that's what it's made of, right? The sattva. So the vritti is sattva. The mind, the atma, is reflected in that sattva, if we can use the word sattva. It's reflected in the sattva. From the standpoint of the ajnani, you know, there's the namarupa that fills the vritti, and then there's the knower, because of the ahankara. There's the knower, there's an identification with the consciousness that is there, reflected, as though reflected in the vritti. It's not that it's something else, it's like chitta-bhasa. is so reflected in the vritti, and the nama rupa is there, right? And you experience that really in the fact that every single vritti is known, everything in it is known, and the knownness is really the self-evident nature of yourself. But the ahankara doesn't look at it that way. The ahankara also suffers from ajnanam. And so what the ahankara does is, in reference to into the experience of a vritti, it identifies the things that are known as, say, this or that, and it identifies the consciousness, as the knower. So there is this split, the knower and the known, and then it can bring in the pramanas, like the sense of sight, for instance, and that becomes the pramana. Yeah? So there's the knower, the known, and the means of knowledge. That triputi there, it's all because of ajnanam, it's all included there in the vritti. But that's why when we dissect this experience, what is really happening is there's the sattva vritti, because of which the content is known, and if I say the content is known, all right, there are two things being said there. There's the content, the nama rupa, and there's the knownness. So if I say instead of the content is known, I say there's the content, the nama rupa, and the knownness, the self-evident nature of consciousness. And that is actually what I experience. And once I recognize that, there's no knower here. There's knownness in reference, say, to the mind. The mind is known. The pramanas that I use are known. The object of the vritti is known. And the knownness is one and the same. There's one conscious being. So say I recognize that. It's the truth of any single vritti, any vritti, doesn't matter what it is. If I recognize that, then when am I not in samadhi? Because I'm just present there completely with namarupa. But the namarupa is mithya. So when am I not in samadhi? That's what he's talking about. He's just taking it to the, we say, not even to the highest level, just to the truth of it. You know? And so once yourself is known, to say that you're not in samadhi, I say the only reason that you could say that is when the jiva raises its head. When the jiva raises its head because of some past karmas and whatnot, and because of your complexes or this or that, or desires that are still, you know, floating about, they come up, and then everything divides up, and you are this after that. Yeah. Then you're in the samsara. For a moment. Swamiji was asked, it came up in a satsang once about something about this, like, they say you have knowledge, but sometimes you get, your knowledge and everything seems to get totally washed away out into the ocean, washed away by the power of a power of an emotion, or, you know, power of some sort of a reaction or whatever. And your knowledge, or power of a strong desire, and your knowledge is not there for the time being. It's not there. So then the question is posed, this is kind of an argument. The question is posed, this doubt. Which is stronger then? The overwhelming emotion or your knowledge? Which is stronger? Because actually the knowledge, the overwhelm has just overwhelmed you. And at that time, there's no knowledge. But which is stronger? You say, your knowledge is stronger. Your knowledge is definitely stronger because it will outlast the emotion. It outlasts the emotion. So even though this emotion has overwhelmed you and you're all down and confused and all of these things, you don't know what to do. You know? I used to have knowledge, but I don't anymore. The fact of it is that the emotions are temporal. Yeah? The self isn't. And your knowledge, the knowledge of the self also is not. Right? Because, why is it not? Because the content, the knowledge of the self is the removal of the ajnanam, which has caused you not to recognize or to be who you are. So knowledge isn't, and gaining of knowledge in terms of the Vedanta is not the gaining of an experience of the self. The experience, self-experience is always here. The knowledge, Atman Jnanam, is called Ajnana Nivritti. It's the removal of the Ajnanam, which causes the removal of the superimpositions and all of that. So that's not going to go anywhere. Yourself, once the Ajnanam is removed, it's not going to go anywhere. You've just been flooded by some sort of an emotional trauma of some sort. But that experience is temporary, as are all experiences. All emotions are temporary. They come and go. All sorrows, all hardships are all temporary. You're not. Say you know that you're not. Then which is stronger? Your self-knowledge or the emotion? You're stronger. Because when the emotion, even if though you can't see straight in the middle of that emotional hurt, you know, it will go. And your knowledge remains. So I've always loved that. It's an important understanding also. And so with that understanding, you know, it's important because they have what they call Savikalpa Samadhi. Savikalpa Samadhi is the samadhi, the natural samadhi of a Jivan Mukta. And it just means that I, no matter what the vritti is, no matter what the experience is, I remain there untouched. There's a natural identification on the part of the body because it's here and it has a sukshma sharira, so it will reflect consciousness. There's no problem with that. It's not going to stop. You gain knowledge and you don't drop dead when you gain knowledge. And so that means the sukshma sharira abides here, enlivens this body through the sense of touch. It continues to, as though, reflect consciousness, to enjoy consciousness. Your mind is sattva, enjoys consciousness. The pranas belong to the subtle body. It's still there until the prarabdha has run out. So all of that is there. All of this world is here to be experienced by your sense organs. But you remain completely untouched. The mind can be touched. You know, the sense organs are touched. The body is touched. They go on, you know, behaving as they do. You know? And sometimes you get overwhelmed. You can get overwhelmed, the overwhelm will go, and your knowledge is fine. But say you're not overwhelmed, you know, what other kind of samadhi do you want? Do you think that you need to sit in nirvikalpa samadhi to be a jnani? I'm saying this because of the autobiography of a yogi and all of this, so you think, well, the end game is that I will go into nirvikalpa samadhi and stay there. And if I come out, I have to go right back in until the body drops. That's actually, in a strange way, in the yoga shastra, you know, and in the Sankhya yoga. So these are things to be clear on. And to be clear that once you know yourself, yourself is the content of nirvikalpa samadhi. It's the content of it. And now you know yourself. So when are you not in samadhi? So you don't have to be strange. You don't have to act like a strange person. You can be a normal person. Yeah, that's a good thing. You can't see the clock. Give it to me. Dharma megham imam vahuhu
Samadhim
Yoga
Vittamaha
Parashati
Eshaha
Yattaha
Dharma
Amrita
Dharaha
Sahasrashaha.
Sahasrashaha.
Okay. here it says, talking about samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, dharma megham imam. Imam means this nirvikalpa samadhi is a cloud. Megha is a cloud. Is a cloud of dharma. So dharma megham imam prahuhu. They say, so samadhi, imam samadhi, this samadhi means this nirvikalpa samadhi, they say is a cloud of dharma. Who says? Yogavittamaha. Yogavittamaha means the atishayena yoga-nyaha. Those people who are masters of yoga, masters in yoga, so who have a wealth of yoga, means they know samadhi. They know nirvikalpa samadhi. And so what do those people have to say about it? This samadhi, this nirvikalpa samadhi, it is a cloud of dharma, dharma megham. Why? He says, varashati eshaha yataha. He says, because yataha, varashati eshaha. This samadhi, this cloud of dharma, it varashati, it rains what? Dharma amrita dharaha. Sahasrashaha. It rains streams. Dada means streams. Sahasrashaha means countless streams of the nectar of Dharma. The nectar of Dharma, the nectar of Punya. It just rains Punya. You know, streams and streams, countless streams of Punya. And so therefore the yogis, those who know this, they call nirvikalpa samadhi, you know, like a huge rain cloud. A huge rain cloud that rains the nectar, streams and streams of the nectar of Dharma, of Punya. There's one verse that says, even staying for one moment, just one short shanam, just one short moment in nirvikalpa samadhi is as though you've stayed in that for hundreds of yojanas or something, for a huge amount of time, for the longest time, just by having one moment of samadhi. The reason for that is that, of course, from the standpoint of the self, there is no time. So it's not like you're in samadhi. You're in samadhi, and from the standpoint of you now, of just abiding as the Atma, there's no time. And so there's no passing of time. And so for you, one moment is, you know, like 1,000 crores, because there's no time at all. And so you come out of that which is timeless. And so it's not about how long you stay in samadhi. Right? Even the slightest moment, if it's a nirvikalpa, you know yourself, and there's timeless from that standpoint. So it's not about time. Who's marking time there? There's no time to be marked. So he's going to give some other examples. We'll do that next time. It's all praise at this point. And all the polas, all the karma polas, and all of the puna and everything. All the good things.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Yeah.